Foods of the Season. It is prime time for food lovers in Maine. The sweet corn is finally coming in, as well as blueberries, peaches, cherry tomatoes, and raspberries. And seafood abounds right now. Think black sea bass, hake, flounder, and lobster. Yum! I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will celebrate the taste of the season with our favorite food experts, celebrated chef Sam Hayward, food historian and cookbook author Nancy Harmon Jenkins, and food writer and editor Peggy Gradinsky. We'll also discuss the national attention the Maine food scene is receiving. Just this week, Bon Appetit named Portland the 2018 Restaurant City of the Year. What are your thoughts or questions about Maine's food scene or new ways to cook the foods of the season? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Big news on the restaurant front for Portland. We will talk about Maine's role in the food scene and get some ideas about what to do with the bounty of the season, from corn to tomatoes to those beloved blueberries. Joining me in our studio, we're so lucky to have this crowd back, Nancy Harmon Jenkins, a cookbook author, writer, speaker, and authority on Mediterranean cuisines. Peggy Gradinsky is food editor with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. And Sam Hayward is here as well. He is an award-winning chef and founder of 4th Street and known for his pioneering work in the farm-to-table movement. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have for our culinary experts? How do you think Maine's restaurants stack up nationally? Do you need tips on what to do with your summer fruits and vegetables? Whatever your question, give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. It's such a beautiful day, and the farmers markets are overflowing, so we'll be in a good mood all day today. Peggy, I'm going to start with the Bon Appetit magazine naming Portland Food City 2018, beating out, you know, every other city in America. How big of a deal is this?
It's, you know, it's a big deal. They've only been naming food cities, I think this was their fourth year, maybe. So they haven't been doing it very long. You know, you need a new, I hate to be a cynic, but as someone in media, you know this, you need a new place every year. You couldn't name New York City the food city for the next 50 years or LA the food city for the next 50 years, although to some extent you probably could. I think it's a big deal.
Is it fair then? Does Portland really stack up against these bigger cities?
I think we have amazing food here, especially given the size of the city. We have some amazing food. I mean, it's part of a much larger national movement of chefs leaving the cities I just named, leaving cities like LA and New York, often returning to their hometown. And we have plenty of that here, for sure. Sometimes going to a new place and opening the sort of restaurants that once you might have only seen in the big cities. That's going on nationally. That's not going on only in Maine. But I would say we have a pretty amazing group of restaurants, given the size of this town. I feel like I can eat out somewhere new many more times than I would expect to, and certainly many more times than one could have if we'd lived here, you know, if I'd been here eating 30 years ago.
Nancy, what was your reaction to the announcement?
Well, I thought it was just terrific, but then I said, why just Portland? Why not the whole state of Maine? Because there is so much going on here, and it's something that I've been talking about for quite a while, and really trying to get people to pay attention to the fact that we have got some great food in this state, and it's not just lobster and blueberries and potatoes up in the county anymore. It's all kinds of things going on, including the great beer movement, despite what they said on Point this morning about—
What did they say?
They said that national beer sales are way down in favor of wine and spirits. And I said I wanted to call in and say, hey, come to Maine, guys. We've got some great beer here, and it's growing. I mean, it seems as though every time I turn around, there's a new brewery opening up, and they're making good beer, too.
More than 100 now.
Is that
although
right?
I think to some extent, in fairness, at least the little piece of the show I heard, they were talking about beer like Budweiser,
they
were saying that the big beer companies are scared of all, so the numbers may not yet that be.
But, right.
You know, again, I would say amazing as the brewery scene is in this state, and it is amazing. That's also a national movement, not something that's just going on in this state.
Sam Hayward, 4th Street was named.
Well, we're always grateful for that. But coming out in the summertime, and this is sort of a common reaction among people that I know in the business. Well, what can we do? We're already full.
I was going to ask you that because we've had house guests and I've said, you know, locals don't eat out in the summertime because we can't get a reservation. We just wait till the tourists leave and then we get our reservation. Yeah,
and it's great in the fall and in the winter and the shoulder seasons in the spring. But many of my colleagues are saying that they're already pretty full. It's going to increase frustration, increase the lines, increase difficulties and challenges, and sometimes cause short tempers to flare. So we'll see how all that plays out.
Well, right? I think one of the biggest problems that restaurateurs and hoteliers and everybody else in the service industry is facing, and that, again, it's not just in Maine, is the lack of personnel, the lack of staff.
Yeah.
Right.
That's such a serious problem.
Which this will exacerbate for sure. Yeah. I wrote a story about restaurants that don't take reservations, and that's slightly different from what we're talking about, but we got an enormous number of letters about that and response or comments under the story, just a lot of comments. And I think it spoke to the frustration people feel when they can't get in somewhere that they want to get in.
Sam, in the last few years, as Maine's food reputation has grown, have the type of people coming to restaurants change? Are you seeing more and more food tourists, people who are coming to stay in Portland just to eat out?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure I could say that the kind of customer has changed, the kind of visitor has changed. But it is interesting that I hear on the streets and in stores people talking about restaurants. And I don't really remember hearing that on the street years and years ago. That seems to be new, that groups of people are discussing restaurants and where they ate last night and where they're going to eat next week. And that's fascinating to me that it is kind of a central entertainment activity for people who are visiting from away now.
Mm. Yeah, let's talk about some other cities. The Bon Appetit article mentioned Biddeford, mm-hmm. but Nancy, I know that there are some places on the Midcoast you would like to call attention to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the whole Midcoast region, but especially what I'm most familiar with, the area from Thomaston, let's say, through Belfast, including Camden and Rockwood, and of course Rockland, which has recently called itself the art capital of Maine. But there are lots and lots of good restaurants at all levels, from a very high-end restaurant like Primo in Rockland to a funky little restaurant like Sammy's Deluxe, also in Rockland on Main Street, or the places that are down on the water. You know, they still, I think the quality of lobster rolls, I probably shouldn't say this, but I really think the quality of lobster rolls has improved enormously in this state in recent years. And I don't mean the funky kind of lobster rolls with foie gras added or anything like that. Just the quality of the bread, the quality of the lobster. People are not always pre-cooking their lobster several months ahead of time and freezing it and then throwing it in with some cheap mayonnaise and calling it a lobster roll. They're really thinking about what they're doing. Like McClune's Lobster Wharf down in Spruce Head is one place that I take people to, first of all, because the setting is spectacular, and you have to have a spectacular setting to have a good lobster roll. But they really are, they're very careful about how they do it, and they, you know, each one is created to order, and it's a great place. And it's not alone. There are other great places, too. So from the lobster roll to the high-end restaurant, I won't mention my daughter's restaurant because I shouldn't do that on the air, but it's really good.
What's it called again? So Peggy, let me ask you this, because you've reported and been a food editor in other cities as well. We like to think we're kind of special here. Are we? Is there some magic formula here, or are other places kind of special too?
I mean, I Maine is special, and I love Maine, and we certainly have some foods here that, you know, I used to live in Texas, and I once did a story about a farmer who was trying to start a blueberry field there. That was very unusual. So we certainly have some special foods here. But it is, you know, not, I was saying nationally earlier, but internationally. This is a time I feel incredibly lucky to live right now. Everywhere you go, there is some amazing food. When I was growing up, there were not amazing bakeries everywhere you went. I used to bake all my own bread because you couldn't get any bread worth eating. I'd never do that now because there's so much phenomenal bread everywhere. You know, right in Portland, there are so many places I can get amazing bread. So yeah, I think Maine is special. And I think wherever we live, we always think that place is special. But I do think it's part of a larger movement, which is a wonderful movement, which, you know, is about eating food that's local, that's handcrafted, that's carefully thought of and away from industrialized kind of food.
Okay, so I'm going to give a little like insider secret here. When our guests come in the studio before we go in the air, we do mic checks. Most NPR stations ask, what'd you have for breakfast? It's a way of people get people to say something kind of in a regular voice and not count to 10 in, you know, a different kind of tone. And two of my three guests today answered they had miche for breakfast. I've never heard of miche. Of course, I'm not as knowledgeable as you all. So Sam Hayward, what is miche, M-I-C-H-E? Where do you get it? And why is it so wonderful?
Well, miche is a rustic bread from France that has different incarnations in different parts of the country. But in the United States, it's become a whole wheat bread. In Maine, Standard Baking makes a brilliant miche that's always on the table at 4th Street in the evening. That's made from a locally raised wheat variety and milled right here in Maine. And in my own hometown of Bodenham, a young man makes breads for the farmer's market on Saturday morning every week. That's the only day he makes it. He's a lawyer the rest of the time. And his miche is fabulous. And my wife woke me up on Saturday morning and said, get down to the market, get a loaf of miche. And so I sliced off a big chunk of that and toasted it up with a little local butter. And it was amazing. He does such a good job. And it's only available on Saturday morning.
And Nancy, your miche had sunflower seeds in the crust?
Yeah, it just was, they were kind of scattered over the top of the crust so that they toasted in the oven and they were really good. And some of them fell out onto the table. So just before I was leaving, I was picking up those leftover sunflower seeds and popping them in my mouth and they were delicious. Mine was made by a young man who I think they all seem to be young. No, that's not true. Standard is not a young man, a young woman. Middle-aged woman, maybe. But there are a lot of young men getting into baking. And this was made by a man named Jeff Deck, who sells in the Camden Farmers Market. And he, too, you know, he deals in Maine grains. And this is one of the greatest things that's happened in this state, I think, in recent years, is the revival of the grain agriculture with farmers growing not entirely heritage wheats, but really good, well-treated wheat that is then milled at probably in Skowhegan at that great grist mill that's there. And then turned by bakers into wonderful breads that are mostly sold in farmers' markets. But I think it also... you know, a lot of credit should go to, now I'm not going to be able to remember his name, the man who invented Maine bread.
Borealis.
Oh, what? Jim Amaral.
Jim Amaral at Borealis Breads, because he's the one who really started this movement. It was his idea that he wanted to make bread from grains grown in Maine. And his bread is available in Hannaford's and probably other supermarkets up and down the state. But it was the impetus for all these other handmade.
And even that is sort of astonishing. I buy his bread at Hannaford at times, and I think, this is really good bread, and I'm buying it at the supermarket. That's kind of, I feel like I live in France, you know? Not used to being able to buy delicious bread at the supermarket.
So let's talk about cooking. You know, I'm just so excited the Maine corn is in. I've had it a few nights already. What are you all most excited about, and what are you doing with it? Wow me.
Okay. That restaurant that I'm not going to name, where my daughter is the chef, is making a fresh corn risotto, which is just fantastic. And she makes the broth for the risotto with the corn cobs once she sliced the kernels off, and then she toasts the kernels in oil and aromatics and onions and things like that, and stirs the rice in. And it is just one of the most sensational ways to eat a risotto, which is basically an Italian preparation, but to eat it in a totally Maine way.
Mm, okay, Sam, what are you excited about? What are you cooking with right now?
Well, it's tomato season. I can't get enough. So since they're coming right out of, sometimes they're in greenhouses, sometimes they're in open fields, but I'm actually getting some terrific tomatoes from the Mid-Coast area. And by Mid-Coast, I usually mean the sort of Brunswick to Rockland area. So we have different definitions of what that means. But they've been amazing this year. One of the things that we do every year at my restaurant is a tomato tart with Bodenham Jetstar tomatoes from Merrymeeting Farm that are baked upside down with butter puff pastry and herbs and seasonings, and then goat cheese mousse over the top, and it comes out hot and molten, and it's spectacular. And that's one of my favorite summertime dishes now.
Oh, my goodness. I hope my grumbling tummy is not going out over the air. Peggy, what about you? What are you excited about right now?
You know, I find in a way I do less cooking in the summer. The ingredients are astounding, but it's also so gorgeous out, and I want to be outside and, you know, swimming or biking, or and you don't really need to do anything. I mean, very often I'll come home from work and just sit on my porch and slice a tomato and eat it on a nice slice of miche, you know, with a basil leaf, and that, and then get a boil some corn and just have corn on the cob. So I mean, last night I have some blackberry bushes. Nancy was making fun of me earlier because last year these are blackberry bushes that are just going wild at the back of my yard. And last year, because it was so dry, I got no decent berries. They were all very hard. So this year, I've been watering them. Don't laugh.
I would not make fun of you.
Okay. And I have these beautiful, fat, gorgeous blackberries. So last night, I picked a cup and I just made in, you know, I literally 5 minutes, I made a blackberry peach cobbler, which has, you know, maybe four ingredients and is 5 minutes work. And you don't really have to do much of anything. I mean, I think a 7-year-old could have made that dessert, and it was just incredibly delicious.
So what are your four ingredients? Blackberries, peaches?
Peaches, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this particular recipe used self-rising flour, which is a bit of a cheat, but I happened to have some I needed to use up at home. That way you don't need to add baking powder and salt, and milk and sugar. Five ingredients. And that was it. Not even vanilla.
I beg to differ. As a Southern boy, self-rising flour is a staple in the South and wouldn't be considered a cheat at all. Makes the best biscuits, soft flour.
And Sam, I don't think I knew you were a Southern boy.
Well, part of my childhood was in Louisiana, and my mother was from South Carolina and Tennessee, and the traditions I grew up with were very Southern.
Okay. Well, I've done something for the first time. You all will make fun of me because I've never done this before. I've made pickled onions and refrigerator pickles out of cucumbers. And I can't even believe I'm the age I am and I've never done it because it's so easy.
Easy and so good, right?
And that makes me trendy too, doesn't it?
It does.
Very, yes.
But I don't think of myself that way.
And when you have something like that in the refrigerator, you can, you know, make something incredibly simple, as I was just saying, like a piece of bread with some cheese and a tomato on it. And if you add pickled onions, it suddenly, you know, it's a tiny thing that elevates a lot of food.
It becomes a plowman's lunch, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. We have to take a break already. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do McVetty's Hearth and Home, offering patio furniture, grills, and wood swing sets for family-friendly spaces. More at stovesofmaine.com. And Algonquin Museum of American Art, presenting Bill Viola, The Fall into Paradise through October 31st. AlgonquinMuseum.org.
When you listen to the news, you might notice that acts of violence by different perpetrators get different names.
It's that jihadist that terrorized New York City.
He does not at all mention anything about terrorism, but instead it is the outcry of a very challenged young man.
What the language we use says about our culture, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Join us this Sunday morning at 11 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
The great tradition of classical music is alive and well on Maine Public Classical. Music of charm, wit, and delight will brighten your morning, enlighten your afternoon, and fill your nights with beauty. Maine Public Classical, spanning the centuries with timeless music every day.
For information on how to find and listen to Maine Public Classical, visit mainepublic.org and click on radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about restaurants, seasonal food, recipes, and more with our food experts. Joining me in the studio, Peggy Grodinski, who's food editor with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. Sam Hayward, who's a chef and the founder of 4th Street. And Nancy Harmon Jenkins, a cookbook author, food authority, writer, and speaker. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Facebook page. I'm going to start with a Facebook post. This is from Mary Elizabeth. She says, first time growing a garden, and I have so much kale and Swiss chard. What can I do with this so they don't go bad? Oh, that's a good problem to have. Ideas?
So she's trying to preserve them?
I think she just wants to use them up.
Oh, she wants to use them up.
Oh, okay. Just simmer them and drain them and add some olive oil and some garlic and maybe a little bit of chopped chili pepper if you like it and eat them.
Or put them in an omelet or put them in risotto. Yeah. Or once you've done that, you can do that at the beginning of the week with a huge stack and then use it in 100 different ways.
Or, again, from my southern roots, do it in a pot liquor. So pork scraps in a soup pot. Add a little bit of water to it and render some of the fat. Add some seasonings. Take the kale and simmer, cut it up or break it up into pieces, and simmer that in this light pork broth until most of the moisture has evaporated. And season it. It's fantastic.
It's so interesting because that's very close to what they do in Italy too. Only they'd start with pancetta, which is the same thing, cured pork, and simmer it a little bit and add maybe a little hint of chili pepper and some garlic, and then put the kale or the chard. It's more likely to be chard in Italy than the kind of kale we grow around here. And just simmer it until it's soft. And as Peggy said, you can use it in a dozen different ways after that. And you could even make a soup out of it. You could puree it entirely and make a wonderful soup, maybe adding a little chicken stock or something to thin it out.
Maybe the trend has already gone by, but kale salad. And there's hundreds, dozens of variations you can do on that. You can drop some off at my house because I have a groundhog and he's eaten all my kale, so I haven't gotten any.
I'm sorry. Well, I for me, the key to a kale salad is to slice it thin and add a little salt. Is that what you do, Peggy?
Yeah, I do that. And people say to massage the leaves before you, sort of put a little bit of dressing on and massage them and don't eat it instantly. Let it sit for a few minutes first.
Sort of the opposite of a salad with the lettuce. Yeah,
exactly.
Elizabeth on Facebook, could you please give some ideas for someone with an abundance of tomatoes? I've made traditional pasta sauce, salsa, and gazpacho, but those options are getting old. Okay, if pasta sauce, salsa, and gazpacho are getting old, you must have a lot of tomatoes. Sam has already recommended a tart. What else would you all be doing with tomatoes?
I'd be preserving them for the winter. And actually, it was Barbara Damrosch who gave me the best tip on preserving tomatoes. You just rinse them off, dry them, put them in a refrigerator bag, and pop them in your freezer. And then in January, when you're ready to make a fresh tomato sauce, you take out two or three of those hard, frozen golf ball-sized tomatoes, or maybe tennis ball-sized tomatoes. You put them in a colander in a bowl and let them drain while you go off and do all your work of the day. And when you come back at night, you just mix them up with some olive oil and cook them for a little bit and some garlic and maybe a little of that chili pepper I mentioned. And you've got sauce all ready to go.
How do you dry the tomatoes? I mean, just with a
towel? Oh, just with a paper towel. I mean, just because you don't want to put them in the freezer with a lot of moisture on the outside.
Wow, there's a great tip.
It's so easy. I've been doing it for years now. I used to strain them and put them in bottles and put the bottles in a boiling water bath and, an endless production. And now I just throw them in the freezer.
And Sam, you're nodding. You've done
I'm
that
nodding.
Too.
I'm nodding. My wife does the same thing. So we have some tomatoes to use in the middle of winter. By the way, the liquid that drains out, that renders out of the thawing tomatoes, is a beautiful tomato water that can be used in a variety of different ways, in ways similar to the way you might use consomme. It's delicious.
Well, yeah, and you can add it back to those tomatoes too. Mm. It's just a way of defrosting them, basically.
We'll go to Amanda calling from Portland. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Thanks for hearing me today. Sam, I wanted to congratulate you on being one of the, of 4th Street being one of the restaurants that I feel straddles the line of what I'm going to mention today, which is we have a dearth of, we have an abundance of restaurants, but I'm not seeing a lot of real innovation like I see elsewhere. And, you know, I remember when Eric Desjolais had Bandol and he really pushed the envelope, and I still miss that. and I know that we have to support our restaurants all year round, so we have to have maybe more traditional fare that appeals to a greater audience, but I really would love to see more innovation. And part of that, I think, ties in with what Barton Seaver is trying to encourage, which is having us use like seafood or a bounty of the ocean that is underutilized right now and that people may be less adventuresome to do on their own. But, you know, I never see sea beans on menus. I don't see a lot of local ingredients other than, you know, at Vinland, like edible nettles or rosehip jam or things like that. And decolonizing our diet, I think, we'd be in optimal position to do that here in Maine. And I'd love to see more innovation in our restaurants.
Okay, Amanda, thanks for your call.
Well, I have to say, I miss Eric's. Eric Desjolais was the chef owner of Bandol, and I miss his cooking too. One of the things I remember eating there was that was particularly revealing was a dish of brains that was absolutely fantastic. I mean, did a great job with organ meats. And I understand about the wild foods that you're talking about. Unfortunately, one of the limitations is that they're harvested in small amounts when they're available at all. So for a restaurant that's serving 300 people, it's pretty difficult to get enough of a particular wild food to go around through that number of people. And that's true of a lot of our summer restaurants. But we do actually more foraged foods we do them all year, but we do them more in the spring and in the fall than we do in July and August.
I think that's probably a better season for forage foods, too. The fresh greens from the forest or the mushrooms in the fall. But she spoke also about seafood, and I think that's another. It's not just up to chefs to provide us with the seafood. It's up to the fishermen, too. And if the fishermen are restricted in what they can harvest, we're not going to see those seafood. And that's why I have been pushing aquaculture. And I think Maine has a future in aquaculture, which is a really important future. I'm almost at the point of giving up eating wild fish, except for lobster. But we would argue that lobster is also a farmed seafood. Because I think we're making enormous strides in this state with, not just with salmon. We've got these two new salmon projects coming in that are very interesting and very problematic. We have, obviously the oysters, the Damariscotta River, but all up and down the coast there are people raising oysters.
And mussels.
There are some clam projects that are having a hard time starting up. There's a certain amount of exploratory aquaculture with groundfish, which has a lot of promise, too. And then there are things like seaweed, which is being farmed. I'm not sure what we're going to do with all that seaweed, but it's good to know that people are working on it. So I really think that, yes, we do need innovation in the restaurants, but we also need restaurants that are going to pay a good, hard look at what's available and use what's available.
I would add, I'm coming at this from a little bit different from what we've just been talking about. But I think, there's often been a debate about whether chefs are artists or whether they're craftsmen. And certainly historically, I think we probably would have said craftsmen. And since the dawn of the celebrity chef era, we're more likely to say artist. But I think really probably the vast majority of chefs are just wonderful craftsmen, and that the people who really push the envelope and really do something innovative and unusual maybe are the more unusual, few and far between. And maybe they're the chefs that maybe one would think of as an artist. But I'd also add that, she's talking about wild food, so maybe that's not fair, but it's it's okay. I don't think you always have to be pushing the envelope in food either. In places like Italy, certainly, they feel like we developed this wonderful cuisine and we've been eating it for 200 years and it's fantastic. And that you don't always have to be eating something new, that you can eat something that's very classic and that's wonderful.
It kind of plays into a consumerist culture when you're always looking for something new. And she mentioned decolonizing. I think you can't decolonize and be a consumerist at the same time. These are two kind of contradictory terms.
I'll add bugs, though, because you mentioned, Jennifer, that you had a whole show on
eating
bugs. And so certainly that hasn't yet appeared on our restaurant tables.
And the chef of Boda in Lewiston had a night.
Yes.
He doesn't think his customers are ready for every night, but there was a night. And so,
I used to live in Texas, and certainly like cricket tacos were on the menu at a fair number of places there.
Thanks for your call, Amanda. We'll go to Sam calling from Orono. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have a few foods that are producing really prolifically this year, and I'd like some help in using them up. The first one are boysenberries. They're all over the property, and I'm picking, you know, 5 or 10 quarts a day, and I've pretty much just been freezing them all. So I'd love any recipes you have, whether that's a pie or a jam, just something simple. And also carrots. I'm trying to find ways to use the greens from those, and I've tried them in pestos and sautés, but they're kind of tough, and they have a really bitter flavor, but I don't want them to go to waste. So also any recipes for carrot greens would be great. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sam. When you said how many boysenberries you're harvesting, Nancy Harmon Jenkins' mouth fell open. So, Sam, what would you do with his
Well, I'm surprised produce? To hear about boysenberries, because I thought that was a Pacific Northwest fruit that's somewhat similar to our blackberries, but that sounds great. When I have an abundance of berries, what we tend to do at my house is spread them in one layer on sheet pans and then freeze them and put them away for the winter in that form in Ziploc bags. And that's pretty much what we've been doing to preserve almost all of our berries. There's nothing wrong with a cobbler, a shortcake, a pie. Those are fantastic ways to use berries, sprinkled on salads. I happen to be a berry freak and use them any way I can think of. And as for carrot greens, almost any place that you would use parsley seems to be a good way to use carrots, because their flavors, while in different concentrations, have similar sort of meaty, bitterish chlorophyll flavors to them that I love to use in different things. And when I have too much of them, I just feed them to my chickens, and they love them especially. But and you're right, sometimes they can be bitter. I usually tell my staff that carrots need to be stored separately from fruits, because the ethylene gas given off by ripening fruits often turns carrots bitter, both the root and the greens. So that's kind of useful to do. But blanching the greens ahead of time is one way to reduce the bitterness, reduce the toughness of the stems, and make them better for different kinds of cooking.
Thanks for your call, Sam. We're going to move on to Don, who's calling from Alfred. This is Don Lindgren. Hi, how are you?
Hi, great panel. Thanks so much, and a super topic that's got me thinking about so many different things. I was originally calling to say that I wanted to add forage foods and mushrooms to the list of ingredients that are terrific here in the summer, and this is a really interesting summer for mushrooms because it was so dry, and then it wasn't so dry. But you guys touched on foraging, so I thought I would just say one quick thing about a food I really like that's happening right now, and I love it because it allows me to keep summer right through March, which is, if you grow cilantro, this is the moment where you've got the, it's before they go brown, and then we start calling them coriander. And those green seeds, I collect them, and I throw them in Ziploc bags and put them in the freezer. And in the middle of February, I take them out, and it's like this little piece of summer. I just, I'll either shave them or crush them into a paste and put them in butter or something like that. So it's just something I love about this moment, and it'll be over really fast, and yet we can keep it.
Don, I really appreciate your tip. I have cilantro that bolted, and so I'm going to go look for the seeds.
Oh, those little green seeds are just wonderful in a salad or as Don said, crushed up and mixed into a sauce. But what a great idea to just freeze them like that.
Yeah,
I'm going to do that, too.
That's wonderful.
Thanks for your call. We'll move to Glenn calling from Brunswick. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I want to hurry so I can go eat.
I know, right?
So, I got some blueberry ice cream in the freezer there. Mm. Anyway, I was invited to an oyster tasting yesterday, Mare Point Oysters in Brunswick, a small company they're growing. And what I learned, I mean, I've lived in New York. You won't tell anybody, right?
No.
Okay. You know, I've tried oysters. I've tried them in South Carolina. They're different all over, but it tastes like Maine. I can't explain it, but it's just this taste, the water and the salt and the oyster. It was delicious. The other thing that was really interesting was that oysters, clams, and probably Sam, you guys know more about this than I do. I'm not an expert, but do play an important role in cleaning the bay. And with the problems we're having, Casco Bay, I think, is the second fastest bay.
Warming.
In terms of, warming. And oysters do well in warm water. They also clean things out of the water that things like clams, which aren't doing so well, had been doing for us. So they're not only great eating, but they play an important role in keeping our bay safe.
Thanks for your call.
Wow, that was a great comment. I have to tell you, I just tasted Mirror Point oysters on Saturday at the Brunswick Farmers Market for the first time, and I really loved them. I hope they scale up so we can start getting them in our restaurant.
Glenn, thank you so much. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about foods of the season on Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do CMCA in Rockland, now showing Maine artist John Bisbee's major exhibition, American Steel, cmcanow.org, and Mercy Hospital, celebrating 100 years in Greater Portland, partnering with the community to deliver the next century of care, mercyhospital.org, and Beth's Farm Market of Warren, featuring a selection of seasonal and locally grown fruits, vegetables, and herbs, fresh picked daily. More at bethsfarmmarket.com.
Stephen King's fictional town, Derry, is based on a real place in Maine.
He takes local things, changes the names a little bit.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll take you on a tour of Stephen King's Bangor. Plus, we'll visit a small Massachusetts town that's the setting for a new series by the author.
You know, you run into somebody in the grocery store and that's the first thing they say is, are you going to watch Castle Rock?
We'll also look at alternative sources of energy around our region. Please join us.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock, right after Maine Calling, here on Maine Public Radio. In this digital age, there is plenty of information everywhere, but don't you sometimes wish you could find exactly what you want? This is how our community calendar works. You search for the date, location, venue, and/or type of event you're looking for, and there it is. The community calendar has hundreds of concerts, exhibits, lectures, and then some from all around the state. And it's always open for new listings should you want to get the word out about your event. The community calendar, another public service from Maine Public. Online at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what is happening in the world of Maine food? My guests are Sam Hayward, celebrated chef and founder of 4th Street, Nancy Harmon Jenkins, cookbook author, writer, and speaker, and Peggy Grodinski, food editor with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Gordon calling from Albion. Hi, Gordon. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm the owner of the Locust Grove in Albion. We're the fruit grower. My wife was on her way to work. She always listens to public broadcasting wherever she goes, and she said they're talking about food, but nobody's talking about peaches, and we're picking peaches right now.
Is it as good a season
right
as last
over.
Year? I remember last year was a really amazing season for Maine peaches. Are we getting the same this year?
I think it's a dry season again, and that means that generally speaking that they finish up fairly sweet, but sometimes a little bit small, and that happened last year. My first varieties, which are finishing up right now, are a little bit undersized. But my second varieties, which I picked the first group of this morning, were significantly larger. I mean, we're talking to chefs right now. I was just amazed. Last year, people who was distributing for me ended up putting some into a Boston market. They were picked up by somebody who was going to New York, because these things are the ones I'm growing are not sprayed by any organic or other chemicals. But the they ended up going to New York, to snap Boston market. And I'm having a call in right now because I'm looking for information on how to get here. But the those ended up, the person who was doing distributing said, they ended up in the hands of the best chefs in the world in New York City. They were bought up by a group down there.
Although I think the best chefs in the world seem to be in Portland.
Yes, exactly.
Gordon, thanks for calling. Well, I've got you on the line. How do you eat your peaches?
Excuse me?
Do you cook your peaches or you just eat them off the tree?
They're off the tree. And, of course, we sell them. And we don't process them here.
No, I meant yourself personally. What's your favorite way to eat a peach?
Somebody was talking about there are all kinds of ways. My wife makes jam. We freeze them, cutting into slices, and a little bit of lemon on them, and then freeze them on a cookie sheet, and then sweep them into a plastic bag, and then keep them for winter. And then when one of the beauties there is that when you pull them out of in the winter, you don't let them completely thaw. You pop them into your mouth when they're still just slightly frozen. You get a crispness out of them as well as the summer flavor. But
peach
all kinds of
ice
ways
cream.
Oh well, Gordon. Yeah, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Can I put in a plug for small fruit? Because people often say undersized, but I go to the, you know, if I haven't made it to the farmer's market and I'm in the supermarket. It's still the, even though our culture has been changing on this front, it's still very much the bigger is better mentality in the produce department of supermarkets in America. And you get these peaches that think they're grapefruits and strawberries that think they're peaches. And they're really often not very good. They're very blown up and bloated and watery. The strawberries often get something in the center, those big Driscoll strawberries called it's called hollow heart. Mm-hmm. They won't be strawberry flesh all the way through. They'll be hollow in the center. And if you're really paying attention and not just eating with your eyes, you'll notice that they don't taste very good. So I think an undersized peach is often, the flavor is incredibly concentrated and wonderful. So
I had an apple grower tell me one time that if you look at the apple growers, they are picking the small apple off the tree and munching on it,
exactly.
Not the large apple. Yeah. We'll go to Sarah, who is calling from Norway. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. So I just wanted to comment, I'm in a very rural part of Maine, and I do think that some of the best chefs in the country are in Portland. And so we've sort of had to get pretty creative in Western Maine. And so we do, this is our third year now of putting together a Foothills Food Festival. And really the point of it is to celebrate local food. And we have a lot of people growing food here in the, you know, the fields of Western Maine.
And isn't that coming up this weekend?
It is. It's tomorrow.
Awesome.
I'm calling to invite you all to the Foothills Food Festival. So a lot of our farmers have really struggled with the farmers markets and really are having to, they travel far distances to go to the Portland markets. So that's one of the ideas of the food festival, is to get a space and to get a lot of people to come and shop local. So we put together a full music stage, a beer garden with all local beer and cider. We have kids and family activities, and really creating like a celebration around local food so people see how that they can get this right in their own backyard all the time.
Sarah, is the festival in Norway?
It is in Norway. It's right in downtown Norway in Longley Square.
Sarah, that is such a great idea. I compliment you on that. You know, for years, Sam and I, it was before Peggy moved here, worked along with Don Lindgren and several others on something we called Maine Fair. And we were celebrating the food of the whole state. But I see now that our biggest mistake was in not focusing on something more local and individual. I should have been doing a Mid-Coast Food Festival at that point.
Well,
I wish you great luck with this.
Thank you so much. And I feel like Maine Fair was actually just here in June.
Yeah, it's morphed into something else now.
Yeah, which it seems like it's trying to get back to that, of really featuring local foods in each of those places. So I commend your efforts as well. That has been an awesome thing as well.
Thank you for calling, Sarah, and good luck with the festival. We'll go to Jennifer, who's calling from Boston. Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm actually in Maine this weekend, which is why I'm calling. My husband and I are going to be in Freeport and Bath just for one night, and we have no plants, and we are wondering what your recommendations are for local spots to hit up for drinks and food and all of the above. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, one night's not enough, but Sam, you want to start?
Well, in Bath, I love Salt Pine Social, and it's a new restaurant operated by the same group that runs El Camino Cantina in Brunswick. And it's a very different kind of restaurant from their first one. But that's really fun. They do a great job, and they really take care of people.
I'm going to be dining in Brunswick this evening, too. And I'm going to the Taverna, the Greek place, excellent, which I'm very excited about. I haven't ever been there. And it sounds like really good Greek food. So that's my goal for the evening.
As for Freeport, I hope maybe we can get a caller to call in, because I often am in Freeport wondering where should I be eating, because I really haven't found a wonderful spot in Freeport. So if somebody knows one, please phone us and tell us.
And also in Brunswick, if I can jump in, Dao Yuan, which is a Chinese bistro on Pleasant Street. I had a fantastic meal there for my wife's birthday last evening, and they really took care of us, and the food was spectacular.
Yeah, wonderful food there.
We'll go to Constantino, calling from Westbrook. Hi, Constantino. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, you were talking about pizzas earlier. I have a suggestion. Last night, the grill was so hot at the end of the day. So I took some peaches and cut them in half, rubbed some oil on them, put them on the grill, and then get them on a plate and just dump some blue cheese and honey right on top.
Yum.
Delicious.
Thank you so much, Constantino, for calling with that suggestion. We just have a few minutes left, so I want to return to something we were kind of talking about before when you were talking about all the fantastic bakers in Maine and the miche. What are some other Maine food products you guys are really excited about right now? Sam, I'll start with you.
Well, last summer I found out that an old family friend was growing rice on a farm in Benton, and the name of the farm is Wild Folk Farm. So as soon as I found out, I basically called up and reserved a few pounds of their rice. And I understand they're dry cultivation rice, but they're also beginning to do some wet cultivation rice.
So rice patties, yeah.
So that's fascinating. Rices were very, very interesting.
So Wild Folk Farm rice.
From Benton, Maine.
Benton, Maine. Nancy, what about you? You have anything that you...
Well, I think I've already talked about aquaculture, which has just been blowing my mind recently. But the other thing I think we're finding, when I go, I have two markets that I go to, and they're very widely separated. One is Beth's in Warren, and the other is Chase's Daily in Belfast. So I have to decide each day which one it's going to be. But in both of them, I'm finding really interesting new greens that are new to me and new to Maine. And at Beth's, for instance, because she has a lot of Jamaican workers who have been with her for years and years and years, amaranth greens, which are like callaloo, and they're just delicious. And you cook them in the same way that you do any other greens, as we were mentioning earlier. You just steam them and mix them with butter or olive oil or pork fat or whatever, and garlic and chili, and eat them. And they're so good for you. And it's delightful to see all of this coming into our state. At Chase's Daily, it was the greens of a Sicilian long summer squash called, in Sicilian dialect, it's called cucuzza. But in Italian-American, it's called guguz. And it, too, is another fascinating green that is just delicious and great to have here.
I've seen sweet potato greens at the Portland Farmers Market, which are really delicious. Yeah. And I want to bring up something that Sam said earlier when we were not on the air, that he had a new Maine food or product that he really liked, which was a sparkling blue wine called Bluet. He can talk more about that if he likes. And I'll just name two quick things. One is, it's really nice to see fava beans here. I used to live in Astoria, which used to be a Greek part of New York City. And so fava beans are used a lot in Greek cooking, and could get them very easily. So I'm very happy to find them here at farmers markets now. Right now you can find them. And the other is kind of a guilty pleasure, which is I'm training for a bicycling ride. So I've been eating a lot of Martha bars. And boy, are they good.
Are those local?
I think they're made in Freeport, I think. Yeah. And when you are biking hard in this kind of heavy heat and you think you're, you know, you are desperate for fast energy, those are really wonderful.
And it's fun that you all mentioned Bleuette because we did a program on wine in Maine and the owner of Bleuette called in. So I want to thank you all again, as always, for being here. The hour goes so quickly. The voice you just heard, Peggy Grodinski, food editor with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. Also here, Nancy Harmon Jenkins, a cookbook author, writer, speaker, and authority on Mediterranean cuisines, and Sam Hayward, an award-winning chef, food pioneer, and founder of 4th Street in Portland. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as all sorts of resources at mainecalling.org. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.